It's time to talk about the outdoors in South Alabama. Hunting, fishing, and getting outside along the Great Gulf Coast. It's time to take it outside with FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. With reports, stories, how-to information, and Dr. Bill's Marine Forecast. Here's Sean Sullivan and Mike Ward.
And here we go. FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Glad to have y'all here on this extra day of February. As we have leap
that's
day.
Right. Yeah, that's leap exactly day. Right. Didn't think about that.
It's an extra day of February, which means it's just longer till turkey season gets here. Just joking.
And that's another thing. Turkey season is a little later this year, too, Sean.
That's right. As we talked a couple weeks ago on the show with Chuck Sykes, we're talking about the March 20th, I think, is the – I don't have my calendar in front of me, but I think that's
open. March 21st, I believe.
Is it 21st? Okay.
And let me see here. Youth season opens up the 14th.
Yeah, whatever be – yeah, because that would be – yep. 21st and 14th. So 21st for the big kids, 14th for the real kids.
And I've talked to several people that still thinks that it opens up the 15th.
Yeah,
it
does
not. Straighten them out on it.
It does not.
Because it has opened up on the 15th for many, many years.
Yes, it is the 21st, and the preceding Saturday, the 14th, is the youth season.
Yeah.
Which gives you a little time between now and then to do burning if you're going to do, or some trapping if you're going to do, you know, some of that. You can run your traps during turkey season,
if
too.
It'll dry out a little bit.
I don't know. I'm trapping in the wet, trapping in the rain.
Okay. And I want to ask you a question about your camp up on the Tom Big River. We haven't talked about
that. No, we
that
haven't.
At all.
I've been putting pictures up on Twitter. And,
how high is it now? What's the highest it's gotten to
when
camp?
When it crested this week, we probably had, and I'm just looking at pictures because I couldn't go up, but my partner took some pictures. It looked like we had about a foot and a half thereabout.
Before it got into camp.
Yeah, a foot and a half before it got in the floor there. So,
oh, man.
Foot and a half,
people
maybe a little
see
bit.
How far up that bluff your camp is.
And I'm gonna, and when the water comes down,
elevated.
I'm going to take. Yes. That's what people aren't seeing on the Twitter feed.
Yes.
I'm going to have to do that when the river comes out. I'll take some more pictures sitting in the same place in the river. Because, yeah, the elevation is not that high. We're probably up around 8 feet. We're not on, you know, we're not on 20-something foot pilings, but as Mike's saying, we're on a very high bluff on the Tom Bigby River.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, it's not
you're
as high
on
as
a high
where,
bluff on the river.
It's not like ThyssenKrupp high, but it's a high. We have a pine tree growing on the bank.
Yes.
We have three pine trees on our small property. They tell you that's how high we are on the river. There's pine trees that could survive. Okay.
Yes.
So that's a good point. So when you see those pictures with just a little bit of sunshine coming underneath the camp. Mind you, that had to come up a long way. We don't really get water in our underneath our camp. Now, it floods from the back. If people hunt the river swamp, know what we're talking about. It doesn't come from the river and over. It comes from the back and comes out to the riverbank. One of the last places it'll flood is the riverbank.
Yeah.
It's going to be around 10 feet at Berry Steam Plant for us to start basically getting a little trickle of water under the camp.
And it's 17.
17 and change is where it peaked out. Believe me, it's been a long – and I want to say this. We are the very lucky ones. There's so many people around us, people over on the cutoff, people at Bates Lake. I know the people – you've seen the story on the news about cliffs and Hubbards and all that stuff. So let me tell you what's not making the news. Not because they're trying to keep it from you, but here's the reality. They can't get their cars into Bates Lake because Bates Lake Road, y'all – has water up to buddy of mine's driving in there the other day to go launch a boat. He's in a full size Ford F-150 on good, not monster truck tires, but big tires, and it got in his doors.
Ooh,
on Bates Lake Road.
Yeah,
to get there,
oh,
and there's water across Paul Bio Road too, Pole Creek Road.
Yeah,
had over on the dirt area. Same thing on Bates Lake. There's two places where the water was across. So the reason that story's untold, there's a little media side. The other ones, they can go to Cliffs or Hubbard's, and they pull in there, and they can put their reporters stand out there in rubber boots and do the report.
Yeah, it's easy to do.
That's how when people say, they're not telling their story. Well, it's probably because they can't get their little low-slung mini SUV.
They got a certain
there.
Amount of time. They got 30 minutes they can go do this and get back to another story or
that's
whatever.
That's just real stuff. I mean, that's you know, people say, why do they do that? Well, so Bates Lake, that's where we launch out of, and so many camps down at Bates Lake, just water at them. And there was water a couple weeks ago when we first started looking. A couple weeks ago. And already some camps there. Those camps have tons of water in them. There were others that were right on the edge that started getting in. There's just I'd say, from what the reports I'm getting, there's maybe 25% of the camps, maybe 30 at Bates Lake that did not get water.
Mm-hmm.
Think about that. I mean, 70. Yeah. And, oh, yeah. Well, no, the ones up on the hill. I'm talking about the ones on stilts down along the water. Let me clarify that. Those that are up on the hill, up above the bait shop, they're fine.
Yeah.
It's the ones going down along the water.
Yeah.
And they camps that haven't gotten water in them ever, you know, or it's been a very long time. So we feel extremely lucky at our camp to be, you know, out of the water. No folks over on the cutoff that got water in their camps. It just weren't. I mean, they were built high. Like, you wouldn't have thought they would ever got water in their camp. And I'm looking at pictures they're putting up of water standing in their bunk room or their living room, you know, a foot and a half.
Yeah. Let me ask you this question. Did you have any hogs on your porch?
I did not. Well, we did. The last time I checked, what we had is rats. And those jokers just looking at me, and I said, you know, if you come right near me, I'm going to punch you off in the water. Other than that, I don't have time. I'm picking up stuff and clean up. But, yeah, that we didn't. And I actually had one and walked up there. We didn't know what we'd see. We figured we'd see a coon or something on our porch.
Yeah.
It was a rat. He was looking at me like, man. I was like, yeah, it's tough times. And I don't cut a lot of slack and quarter to a rat. But I actually felt sorry for him. And you're talking about the hog pictures out of Sunflower. I know that a lot of us have seen this week. Where they came on in the camp and got up on the fireplace.
Saw that. Yeah, they
and
got
on
up
a
in
tree.
The
and,
yeah.
Well, I tell you what, this is going to be a hog sweeper right here. It's going to bring the hog population down in the swamp. Those that did not get out.
Yes.
There's not at 17 plus at Barry Steam Plant reading on the Mobile, y'all. There's not a hidden ridge. I keep saying this to folks. There's been some floods when like everything's flooded out, and you're like, yeah, you don't know about this ridge, you don't know about that ridge, y'all. There's not a ridge I know about along the Alabama and the River Swamp or the Tom Bigby right now
right
in the interior
Alabama,
swamp.
Right at the Alabama and at the cutoff right there. There's a pretty high ridge right there that most of the time doesn't flood.
Okay,
I don't know whether it's flooded.
You're talking about where the
not.
Farm is, where the open field is there?
I don't know if it's flooded or not.
So the person who owns that place listens to Mobile Mornings and Midday Mobile and has sent me pictures on Twitter, water covering it.
Oh, that's bad.
Real bad.
Really bad.
Yeah, so the flood issue out there. Listen, and that's one thing that I've been trying to tell folks that, you know, we have these dry days here and we're trying to get the river down because it's going to rain again. We're going to rain this coming up week. And this is not coming right out. I mean, you have falls, you know, river falling at Leroy on the Tom Bigby. The Claiborne situation is unreal to look at that, to look at that flooding at Claiborne. But it's going to take a long time for the river to get back. When it's at 17-something, it's got to – where we are on the Tom Bigby, but we watched the Mobile reading – it's another 9 feet before the river's even back in, kind of in the banks. Still full, but kind of in the banks at us. And remember, we're on a high bluff. So.
Yeah. And this 9 is supposed to start going down until next week.
And then if you get more rain, does it hold? So it's a lot to talk about. Listen, I want to talk about this before we go into our next segments here. I've got an interview coming up with Chris Bush, and I'll explain who he is if you do not already know in just a second. But we lost a member of our outdoors community, our sportsman community, this last week.
Yeah.
And I want to make sure that people know. People have asked. I know a lot of people on social media had talked about it. But passing away of Mike Thompson.
Yes.
Captain T-Bone, as I used to love to call him. If you wonder why that sounds familiar, well, if you look at the person that had accumulated the most trophies at the Liars Contest at the Alabama Deep Sea Fishing Rodeo, be none other than Mike Thompson, Captain T-Bone. The man told a story better than anybody I think I've ever met. He's had me laughing so hard, like blown beer out my nose, laughing at his stories. He was just a big hunter, big fisherman, big sportsman, Delta rat from way back.
Oh, yeah.
Delta rat from way back. And a guy that's been not just in the world of enjoying the outdoors, but writing about the outdoors for the Press Register, Great Days Outdoors magazines, other magazines out there. He wrote for Alabama Game and Fish when it used to be out. He's written so many duck articles and trout articles, fishing articles over the years. Great photographer as well. And he's going to be missed there. And what we're sitting here doing right now, Outdoors Radio, he was doing this in the old days, that show he had with Mike Tindall and Pete Melish, Captain Pete Melish on that.
Mm-hmm.
He was doing that way back. So if you like talking about, reading about, laughing about outdoors, Mike Thompson was part of our lives.
Yeah.
And it's a loss. It's very sad news.
Yeah, I saw a picture of him at the rodeo on the Liars Contest. And, I mean, he's funny anyway, but he's in his polka dot or whatever, a hearts, whatever, underwear,
yeah,
and a T-shirt. Hearts, underwear, and T-shirt telling his story on stage at the Liars Contest. Now, he's just a funny guy. Great guy. He's going to be really, really missed.
Absolutely. So it's with some heavy hearts we're bringing that news about Mike Thompson. All right, we're coming back from the break. We're going to talk to Captain Chris Bush with the Speckled Truth. And now, of course, the podcast, the Instagram page, the website, and he's going to be coming to town, going to an ACFA meeting, something that was important to Mike Thompson, and the Mobile Boat Show. So we'll join that conversation in just a second with Captain Chris Bush right here on FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Glad to have you all along. And good to get this guest. It's good to get this guest on the show because I know he has a big following among people listening to FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. I count myself among those folks. And we're going to get to talk with him because he's coming to town as well. Captain Chris Bush from The Speckled Truth. And I would say podcast, but also social media pages, fantastic pictures of big trout, and a whole lot more. Joining us right now on FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Chris, thanks for your time.
No worries, sir. No worries. Good morning.
Hey, good morning. And yeah, Speckled Truth, for the seven people left in the audience that have not heard about the Speckled Truth, what is Speckled Truth?
First off, there's way more than seven people that haven't heard of it, trust me.
Okay, nine.
We're still growing, but... The Speckled Truth really is a brand about conservation and trophy trout. That, to put it succinctly, that's what it's about. But it has a kind of rooted history to some extent. It's actually a blog that I started writing back in 2013 about my pursuits for targeting big fish.
Okay, so you started that way, but I think we need to, as always, hit the rewind, because what's amazing is your hunt for big speckled trout, but the breadth of knowledge. You know, think about it. I'm a Mobile Bay fisherman, right? And I got to go out and fish a few other places, but I listen to your podcast. Here you are talking about, with firsthand knowledge, you're talking fishing the Texas coast, which is on my bucket list. But then you're talking about fishing right here out of, you know, just west of us in Biloxi. Then you're talking about fishing southeast Louisiana. Then you're talking about Florida. You have experience hunting big speckled trout all over the Gulf Coast, man. That it puts you in pretty small company there of people that have that kind of experience in so many states.
I've got to actually attribute that to my time in the military. So for those who don't follow us or don't follow us on Speckled Truth, I'm actually an active duty Air Force officer. And so I've told this before on a number of podcasts with Salt Strong and Tom Rowland. But really, the Air Force has been pretty good to me in the pursuit for targeting trout. And so backing it up even further, the love and the passion for the fishery and for trout in general starts with my upbringing on the Louisiana Delta with my dad. And so we fished together so much. And he, one, just generally means so much to me as a father. But we spent so much time out in the Louisiana Delta. Well, my upbringing was unlike, I think, a lot of other folks, where when we would launch the boat, it was really kind of anything that would bite.
Mm-hmm.
My dad, not so much. It's really trout and trout and trout. That's it. If it's anything else coming over the gunnels, it's going right back. We're not, that's not a targeted species. Even though it was fun to catch and reel in, that's not why we went. And so he is just a trout fanatic. And so growing up, we fished a lot. We fished a lot. And so to the point where it developed in, obviously, a greater passion in terms of getting my charter license and trying to do that, you know, through LSU and getting my commission. That's kind of how I paid my way to get into the Air Force. And then that's kind of the starting point. But as the Air Force, the first duty assignment I had was Korea. And so, okay, obviously nothing there. But when I moved back, I moved to Charleston, or not Charleston, but Sumter, South Carolina, but I fished the Charleston, Savannah areas. And then, because I still love trout, regardless of where I went in the world, I was still something that I really loved. And so getting to come back and being able to target those species on the East Coast, then I moved from the Carolinas down to Biloxi, and that's really when I started focusing on targeting big trout and big trout only. And then moving from there to Texas, here the first time in San Antonio, and getting to fish the Texas coast, and then moving over to Florida and living on the east coast of Florida and fishing the Indian River and Mosquito Lagoon and up in Jacksonville and Fort Pierce, and now moving back to Texas. You're right. I've been super fortunate to fish all these various complexes and estuaries, but I got to attribute that to my time actually as an active duty Air Force officer. And so, yeah, I've done deployments here and there, and that's kind of taken me away from fishing. But in short of it, is I've been able to experience these fisheries firsthand by virtue of, like, literally living there on the Air Force dime, right? And so I'm still working. And that's the biggest thing, is being able to work a full-time job as an active duty officer and regards to that, but still getting out there and trying to pursue and target these big fish. And I've learned so much fishing each estuary, and as Speckled Truth has grown, knowing people and connecting with people in these estuaries and learning so much from them and how they target. And so what happens is you just build this wealth of knowledge that was really started and founded, you know, when I was 9-10 years old, bebopping around in our old 16-foot Weldcraft aluminum boat and fishing out of Delacro or Port Sulphur. We called it Get the Net. And so starting it there and establishing that foundation, just growing it, you know, year after year. And so, yeah, I try to apply all of what I know now kind of wherever I go. And so I think it's been awesome. It's been a really unique journey.
Just joining us, talking to Captain Chris Bush from the Speckled Truth. Okay, I got to ask you, first of all, thank you for your service to our country. First of all, that's first and foremost, your service. That I appreciate that. And then on the flip side, those other than Korea, those are pretty lucky deployments, man. There are places that are far away from speckled trout you could have been deployed.
Oh, yeah, in terms of assignments, absolutely. My wife's yeah. always said she's allergic to cold weather, which obviously we know is the case, but... No, I mean, I'm not going to lie. We've been super fortunate as a family, as myself personally, to have kind of drawn a lucky card there with the Air Force and being stationed in these areas. I've done nothing different. I've just tried to continue to do my job and do it well and kind of, you know, let the chips fall where they may. I've never asked for a certain assignment or gone a certain place. It's kind of been what that next step has been in my own Air Force career, in terms of career progression development. And so it's almost like the stars are aligning to some extent with allowing me to continue the both passions, right? Because I love leading. I love the Air Force. I love serving our country. And for 15 years, I mean, of course, we're close to retirement at this point, which is great, but that's not why we do it, you know? And I just enjoy the leadership aspects and learning and leading and that's been great, but on the same token, as I've been able to continue to develop and grow as an angler and experience these different fisheries. And so, it's really just the perfect balance, and I'm thankful. I really am thankful for both.
Chris, here's my – if we were in the elevator, so if we had met and I figured out, oh, my gosh, I've got 2 minutes, 3 minutes in the elevator here with Chris Bush and I'd heard this podcast, this is what I would ask. I would say, how big is the culture shock of learning how to fish trout coming from southeast Louisiana and then being at Fort Sumter, being there on the Carolina coast? Describe that for Gulf Coast anglers like me. How different or how the same is it? I mean, obviously, you got the tides, got more tides up there, but is it the same game? Kind of give me a quick description of how different or same it is between the Atlantic and the Gulf Coast.
Sure. So I'll actually use that as a perfect example. So I'll use Savannah and Charleston because they're kind of similar with regards to the tide. So tide is big. So the first thing I would tell a person to do is obviously look in study structure. You know, obviously Google Maps is obviously a good tool. But aside from that, understanding tide, understanding kind of water movement, obviously in and out, understanding structure. And then aside from that, then kind of developing technique and confidence in your technique. And so the parallels between Southeast Louisiana, where I fish, let's say in Port Sulphur, that's what I consider my home waters.
Okay.
And the Carolina coast was, I started to look, well, let me back up a little bit more. So understanding that Louisiana is more of a bay fishery. They have more bays, less rivers, unlike the Mississippi and Alabama coast. And so it's more of kind of a bay fishery fed by one large river that has some influence to the bays and estuaries. But on the same token, is fish still relate to structure, i.e. points, cuts, we call them trenasses or whatever mm-hmm. it is. So when I got to Carolinas, I then had to I looked for that type of structure, cuts, main points, you know, breaks, little coves, obviously some man-made structure, rock, jetties or things of that nature, and say, okay, there's my structure. Now I need to understand how that water movement, as big as it is in relation to what I'm used to growing up, where there's 6-foot tides every 6 hours, so there's 2 incoming and 2 outgoing tides in the Carolinas and in Georgia complex, as opposed to Louisiana, where there's 1 outgoing, 1 incoming per day, and it's only at a strong point, it's 2 feet. So there's just a tremendous volume of water. So now I'm setting up on these different structure points or drops, and now I'm understanding how hard that water is moving and where that current break is.
Hey, Chris, Chris, if you get a little closer to that phone there, we're having just a little trouble hearing you.
I'm sorry.
There you go. Yeah, absolutely. Better. So So pick it back up. So we're talking about the differences. First of all, I just side note, y'all. Once again, tell folks what an average tide is in that area.
Yeah. So in the Carolinas, it's about 6 foot.
That's unreal.
At a minimum. That's huge.
That's huge. That's like that's something we do not see. I mean, it's how do you deal? I mean, there's areas you're fishing that are dry land at the other part of the tide.
Yeah, so, I mean, pretty much what you need to do is figure out where you need to be. So if I'm fishing like a oyster rake or oyster bank or something like that, I know that those fish are going to relate to that structure. But I need to know that as soon as that tide is high and it's just getting ready to fall, I need to be there then. And so that's when you start to really pick it apart and go, okay, that's what's happening. But you also understand that when that tide does fall out, at that volume of pace, where those fish are going to settle. And it all goes back to the foundation that you have, you know, in Louisiana. And so, like I was getting ready to say, is, you know, growing up on the South Shore, fishing the Causeway or fishing the Pontchartrain Complex and being able to fish those fish really deep on those pilings, you start to kind of develop, okay, I'm fishing these bends in this river or this little bitty creek. And so now understanding those fish are probably pulled into that spot, now I have confidence in my ability to then fish those fish at a deeper complex, you know. And so, again, it's all about understanding kind of what those fish are doing with relation to the structure. And then aside from that, what techniques am I going to use to now apply to go and fish or try to catch those fish in that certain situation?
Yeah, it's something. I mean, it's something to be able to see the similarities in amongst so many things that might distract a Gulf Coast angler, like those 6-foot tides, for sure. I want to, once again, if you're just joining us, talking to Captain Chris Bush with the Speckled Truth. Now, y'all are going to be at the Mobile Boat Show starting on Friday.
That's correct. Yes, sir. This is the first time we've ever done the Mobile Boat Show. We're actually pretty excited about it.
Could be a bunch of people in there, and you'll have a booth people can stop by and visit. How's that going to work?
Yes, sir, that's correct. So we'll have a booth. I think it's a little 10 by 10 booth that we work with Miss Mary Bland and Melissa.
Yep.
The show coordinators, and they're awesome. And so we'll just have a booth, right? And so the idea that we tell people is when they're coming to visit us at a show is, of course we have apparel and things of that nature, but that's not the reason we're there. And that's not the reason we started coming to boat shows, was to sell that type of stuff. What we want to do is, no kidding, I kid you not, it's hard to convey, is we want to talk trout fishing with you. We at the Biloxi Boat Show we just recently did, we did in-booth seminars of teaching people how to tie an FG knot or a loop knot or uni to uni and things of that nature that people see on YouTube or see on social media, but maybe haven't had the proper person to teach them how to do it properly. And so we extend ourselves, and keep in mind, we don't know it all by any stretch of the imagination. We just want to like just talk about how you're approaching the fishery, or they can get feedback on maybe some things that we would do and vice versa, right? So it's kind of a learning thing there. But on the same token, is we obviously try to use that platform to then talk about our pursuit for targeting big fish. But aside from that, why we do what we do in terms of conservation, right? And in terms of taking what you need and release the rest, that's our main mantra of Speckled Truth, is a self-discipline, a conservation approach, a common sense approach to taking care of a fishery. And that is basically taking what you need and release the rest. So if you get an opportunity to catch one of those big trophy fish that we are pursuing endlessly, we want you to also take care of it. We want you to give back to a resource and understand it's more about the experience and the approach as opposed to the actual reward.
All right, let's hold up against break, because when we go to break here, I want to come back and talk more about that, about those big trout and the dirty 30 of big trout here as we continue our conversation with Captain Chris Bush from The Speckled Truth. He's going to be at the Mobile Boat Show. Plus, he's going to be at the Alabama Coastal Fishermen's Association meeting coming up this week as well. Give you more details when we return right here on FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Glad to have you along. Sean Sullivan, Mike Ward. Of course, we will be at the Mobile Boat Show back again for the Guides Corner. And we have a stacked lineup here.
Lots of folks will be there.
I mean, Captain Bobby Averscato, Captain Richard Rutland, Captain Charlie Gray will be there. By the way,
Miller.
Yeah, Wayne Miller. We'll be talking about that sweetwater fishing, the Bass Front. Also, Wayne Edgeworth, who killed the number one ranked 9 point, the state of Alabama, yes, all-time record. We'll have him and his buck there with us at the event. Of course, we'll be talking some hunting as well. Hopefully, Kenny Weiss from National Wild Turkey Federation there, Stephen Daniels there as well. They asked me for the list the other day for the boat show, and I'm like, I have them booked every 15 minutes, somebody coming
just
through.
Just tell them everybody's coming.
Everybody's going to be there. And another thing you could do when you're at the Mobile Boat Show is stop by and check out what's going on with the Speckled Truth. And it's a real treat this morning to get to talk to Captain Chris Bush from the Speckled Truth, the podcast, the Instagram page, the Facebook page, and the home of the Dirty 30, right? The Dirty 30. What is the Dirty 30?
The Dirty 30 is a program, and we call it a citation program. Basically, what we do is we're trying to gather data on how many 30-inch trout are caught across all the estuaries, so from Virginia all the way to Texas. And so if you catch one of those fish and you have the proper measurements and photos associated with that, you would submit them to us, and we'll mail you a box full of tackle as well as two stickers. One is a state citation sticker. In other words, it's kind of like a cutout of the state and where that fish was caught. And then we'll also send you the coveted Dirty 30 citation sticker. It's basically a round sticker, and it has a logo that we've created. It's called Dirty 30. And so we tell people the only way to get those is to earn those. And that is just a lifetime of pursuit, fishing in crummy weather, fishing in great weather, fishing all the time at night, whatever. We understand that sticker is not for sale, and it's better suited for somebody who earns it. And so that's the idea, though, is to really get an idea of how many big 30-inch fish are caught across the estuaries. And then, from a data analytics perspective, see if there's correlations with regards to certain, you know, theories, angling theories that we would have from, you know, do big fish get caught around the new moon or the full moon? And so, you know, do big fish only come in the springtime, or are big fish caught at all in the winter? You know, just simple concepts like that. But aside from that, we're just starting to now put analytics and seeing tangible data results that either confirm or maybe give us and open the aperture of our angling theory of it used to be very isolated. Now it's maybe that's up for discussion again. And so the only way to do that is to get and track those dirty 30s across the states.
You know,
that's kind of the program itself.
What you're doing too, I'm sure you realize this, is what couldn't even be done at a state level. That's what, so, you know, talking about conservation of trophy trout and getting this information. You know, Alabama could do a great job. Mississippi could do a great job. Louisiana, Texas, Florida could do a great job. But they're going to look at things within the confines of their state where they're paid to, you know, be the fisheries department for that state. You don't have that constraint. You're looking at the whole Gulf Coast and the East Coast.
And the East Coast, yes, sir. Yeah, and honestly, I never maybe thought of it that way. But, yeah, we are. I mean, across the estuaries. And we talk about it socially. You know, we don't post that stuff just because we're still really, one, the data set's pretty immature. You know, I think right now we have close to maybe 250, I haven't looked at it in the last week or two, but 250 total Dirty 30 entries into the program. And this is for 3 years of data, don't get me wrong.
Yeah. So no, but that's still, I'm still, wow.
Yeah, we're looking at your Instagram post right now, and
Mike's eyes have rolled back in his head.
Oh, I've never seen so many big, giant, I'm talking about monster speckled trout.
Well, I'm not going to lie. A lot of people have probably mastered the art of long-arming. I'm probably one of those guys. But
Well, we mastered that pretty good ourselves, too.
But there's some of these. You ain't faking anything here. These are just slobs.
Yeah.
Legitimately, though, I mean, the people that do follow us and participate in our programs and and that's been, I think, the humbling part about this whole endeavor is that we've met, I guess maybe I've gained a better appreciation for how good or how many anglers are really, really good out there. We have a lot of anglers, young and old, that are very, very good at fishing. And it shows, right? I mean, and that's the cool part is getting to know these people. On a personal basis and see what makes them tick and how they approach things. And it's humbling for me because I think, you know, okay, I'm growing as an angler. I'm certainly not the best by any stretch of the imagination, but there are dudes out there and gals out there that are just really, really remarkable anglers. And so we give them a platform to showcase some of their catches. And for us, again, collecting the data is huge. Right, because now we can start to kind of understand more about a fish and a size of fish. Because that's the difference is that, you know, a 16-inch trout, we've always thought a 16-inch trout is totally different from a 30-inch trout. And obviously we're seeing with the data that, honestly, that's pretty true.
You know, you look at these, and I don't know what the fair correlation would be, because Mike and I are both pretty big deer hunters, but look at it. A 30-inch trout, to me, that has to be a deer that scores 200 inches. I mean, it's you know what I'm saying? I've caught a lot of speckled trout in my life. Yeah. I've never broken 30. You know, and when you see those fish that are in the upper 20s, they look like freaks of nature sometimes. I remember looking at some of them over the years, have been brought in tournaments and all that, and the fish doesn't even look like a regular, whether it's losing spots or just the girth or the shape of it. They're a different critter, man.
But a 30-inch trout is how big, Chris? Typically.
Pounds? Well, it depends. So,
typically.
Yeah, so typically around like the 8.5-pound mark. Eight and a half is right about average, I would think. Now, obviously, you have some that are just absolutely gluttonous and ridiculous, and we call them savages. the two biggest 30-inch fish I've caught, so I have 4 30-inch trout, and I have one that's 30 and a half with a 17 and a quarter-inch girth, and she was 11 pounds.
Wow.
The other one I caught this past December was 31 and a half, and she had about a little over a 16 and a half inch girth, and she was 10 pounds.
She's a little more shapely.
I had a 31 that had like a 14 and a quarter inch girth, and she was only 8 and three quarters. And then the one I caught in August this past, August, September, with my son, she was 30 inches on a button. I didn't even get a girth because when we weighed her, she was only 7.57. So the range of these fish in terms of weight is, I mean, it varies, one, depending on time of year, certainly, right? Because you see fish change diet and things of that nature.
Well, roe, too, how much roe they've got in them and how much they're feeding and gorging.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. But, yeah, typically I think a 30-inch fish is going to weigh about 8 pounds. Eight and a half pounds is probably pretty safe to say.
That range in 30-inch fish is from my Aunt Dolores to a Hollywood model for the same height.
to get to your point, though, and y'all were kind of talking about it, I had Jay Watkins and Mike McBride, who are legends here in the Texas coast, and both of them said it almost identically. But Jay put it, I think, a little bit better than Mike did with regards to these 30-inch fish and how special that fish is. And so Jay Watkins said a 30-inch trout is like killing a Boone and Crockett deer on open public land, on a low-fence public land.
Yeah.
And then Mike McBride says, he also says, what people don't realize is these fish make up 0.5% of the actual trout population. And so that's how rare these fish are. But on the same token, as like I was saying, I mean, 250 dirty 30 entries, and that's just with the people that I reach, which is about 3.3 million across the states. But
that's a lot.
We're not reaching everybody. So there's more 30-inch fish caught in a year than you would think. But on the same token, is there are also a lot more anglers pursuing them than what we think, you know. So it's pretty cool to kind of start kind of stacking all this data up together. Yes, sir.
Yeah, it's fantastic, and it's real interesting too, because you rolled out a stat. That's what I was wondering, how rare that trout is. So 0.5% of the population.
Yes, sir.
Yeah.
Y'all think about that. I mean, that is like it's like hitting the lottery kind of stuff. I mean,
yes, sir.
I mean, of course, in this case, you have, you know, skill set that puts you, but there still has to be, I mean, you put yourself to catch all those 4 30-inchers, you were in the right place, but there still is an element of luck, isn't it? I mean, you got to be in the right place, got to be doing the right thing, but there's still luck involved.
So much luck. I mean, the stars have to align, but on the same token is, and that's kind of what I think the novice guy who's just getting into targeting trophy trout versus a guy who's pretty established and has really made this a life pursuit, i.e. Dr. Jay Wright, who also had on my podcast and good friends with. He's out of the Florida area, but he's actually caught and registered. Well, one, he's caught a myriad, like a ton of fish over 30 inches. But he also has 3 IGFA certified world records for speckled trout in various line classes. And so what you do, though, is a guy who's serious like that and a guy who's serious like me and those who follow Speckled Truth as opposed to the traditional angler is that what you start to see and develop over the course of time is what makes these trout tick. Like, what odds can I put in my favor that if that fish is in that area, he's going to bite my lure? Mm-hmm. And so that's the difference, I think, from again, the novice to somebody who's pursuing literally world record fish. I mean, and that is, you know, looking at time of year, water temperature, moon phase, da-da-da-da. I mean, you just continue to rattle it off, and you go, okay, based off of what's been going on environmentally, what moon phase we're in, what time of year, what's going on, I'm going to go fish this area based off of what I've seen in past, and then hopefully that big fish that hopefully is there, I make the lucky cast to put it right in front of her, and she eats it. Hey, I mean, that's really what it boils down to.
Hey, Chris, we've only got about 2.5 minutes left. I want to ask you a quick question. If you had, first off, where did you catch your 4 30-inch fish? Were they in Texas or Florida or whatever?
Sir.
And if you had one place to go to catch a 30-inch fish, where would you go?
Okay, so 4 30-inch fish all came out of the state of Texas. 2 in the Corpus area, 1 in Baffin, 1 down in Lower Laguna Madre. And then,
well, that answers the second question. We don't have to go any further.
Yeah.
So, but to answer your question, the Texas coast is huge. If I could set up shop and fish an area for the rest of my life, just targeting big fish, it would be Port Mansfield in the lower Laguna Madre down in Super South Texas. That place is the most unique place I've ever been to in my life. And so it's basically a body of water that is about basically shin to hip deep, and pretty much everywhere you go and everything is wadeable, and there's just big fish everywhere. I've been with Mike McBride cruising that flat and seeing fish that I could only hope to one day wish catch. So they definitely exist down there. Yes, sir. Yeah.
So I know a lot of people go down to Fort Pierce and all that area, mm-hmm. and they catch some really big trout down there. And I know you were down there fishing. Didn't catch any big trout down there? I know you know people have caught them down there.
No, I did. So my biggest one I fished out of the Florida East Coast area was 28 inches. I caught her actually in the Banana River on a fat boy. And so, yes, sir, there's a lot of really big fish. I will say, though, fishing pressure there is a lot different. So it's a clean water fishery. There's a lot more fishing pressure. And what happens is those fish are a lot more line shy and very, very they're definitely more in tune with what's going on in terms of external pressures. As opposed to here, there's much more wadeable flats, there's a little dirtier water, and so it makes them a little bit easier to catch. But honestly, though, if I was in the Indian River Lagoon, in the upper northern reaches of the Banana River right there in the East Coast, if I were to close my eyes, snap my finger, and then open them back up, I would think I was actually in the lower Laguna Madre. It looks that similar.
Oh, we're gonna have to get you back on the future and deconstruct that, because I've listened to enough of the podcast over time. You're talking to people and thinking about Little Lagoon around here. It seems like I'm gonna ask this question, but I don't have time for it. The lack of tidal movement seems to be something that leads to big trout.
Not necessarily, because I would argue that, and this is a whole different story, but I would argue that in the northern northeast reaches of Florida complex in Jacksonville, tremendous tides, and I know a lot of really good anglers that catch a lot of really big fish.
See, this is why we have to do a whole other show on that. Yeah. Okay, once again, going to be Speckled Truth. Stop by and see the booth at the Mobile Boat Show. And Chris, if those seven, you think it's more, okay, nine people that don't know what you're doing with Speckled Truth, let them know where to find you on social media, how to find the podcast, all that good stuff.
Sure. Podcasts on any of your podcasting streams, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Stitcher, Spotify, whatever. TheSpeckledTruth.com you can go. We're updating our website from my piddly old blog to an actual full-fledged website. But you can also find us only on Facebook and Instagram. Just search Speckled Truth.
And it has been a pleasure. And remind folks, too, if they get a chance to come out to the Alabama Coastal Fishermen's Association, you're going to be out there. That's on Thursday, right?
That's correct. Yes, sir. We'll be giving a talk, actually dissecting a little bit of the citation data that we've seen with relation to moon phase and some of those angling tendencies. And we'll be kind of deconstructing that data in a public forum.
I can't wait. I'm going to be in the back of me. Another question, Mr. Bush. Another question.
That's okay.
Hey, Chris, thank you for your time, and we can't wait to see you.
Yes, sir.
See you, Chris.
What a treat. Chris Bush, Captain Chris Bush from Air Force. Man that serves our country and serves us anglers.
Yes, sir. Maybe he'll take you on a jet airplane ride.
Well, you see the flying I've been doing on the Cessna lately. We'll be now. He goes a lot faster.
Yeah, I can see that.
A lot faster out there. All right. A big thank you. And we'll come right back to wrap it up for this FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. All right. Wrapping it up for this FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Big thank you to Captain Chris Bush.
Oh, what a knowledgeable guy.
Man, talking big trout with that guy. You'll be able to see him at the boat show. We'll be down there, too, for the Guide's Corner, starting Friday, then Saturday, then Sunday.
Yep.
Come on by and see us, plus so many in the Guide's Corner. So Mike and I are going to be there. Of course, Captain Charlie Gray, Captain Wayne Miller, Captain Bobby Averscotto, Captain Richard Rutland. If I'm forgetting somebody, on the fishing front, we got the fishing part done there. Also, Wayne Edgeworth. With his Alabama record buck, 175 inches of 9-point.
He's going to be there for 3 days?
In person, all three days.
Okay.
He's bringing the buck, the pedestal,
we may
the
not
story.
Want to see him, but you definitely want to see the deer.
Buck is unreal. plus, hopefully, our buddy Jason Smith.
Yeah, Jason will be there.
All right, we'll be talking with him. Listen, there's a bunch of us down there. We'll talk more about this next week and talk to you live from the Mobile Boat Show next week on FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors.